are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, as support for Roe v. Wade hits a new high, the fight to stop Brett Kavanaugh gears up. And America's worst colleague quits in the public sector after kneecapping his union. Meanwhile, accidentally leaked new documents show that the Interior Department, charged with protecting our national parks and monuments, think national parks and monuments are useless. Meanwhile, New York Daily News gets gutted. Another lesson in vulture capitalism. GOP tax cuts failing workers, and millennials are taking it on the chin. And the heartwarming story of a local anarcho-commie who spent a day wandering through a neoliberal looking glass festival, and a conservative who freaked out at an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez rally. ICE, still a horror show. Sean Spicer still has a problem with the truth. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, we're going to go over the news today. We're going to talk a lot about Brett Kavanaugh, because while it's rare that we have a day where we're not talking about either new indictments or the latest potential nuclear confrontation we'll have in the next 12 to 16 hours. So we're going to talk about Brett Kavanaugh, what's happening in that fight. It is starting to gear up, and we're starting to see the leaks that we had talked about in the Good Ship Democratic Caucus, and we will discuss that in a moment. First off, want to just remind you again about BetterHelp.com. BetterHelp is affordable, private, online counseling. You get unlimited access to licensed, trained, fully accredited therapists. That's perfect for you. You can do it on your phone, on your computer. You can do it through text, voice, or video chat. LGBT friendly. It's great for couples counseling, anything else you're going through in life right now. All you need to do is go to betterhelp.com/majority. You fill out a questionnaire. They match you with a counselor who is perfect for you, and you can start counseling today. If you decide you don't vibe with that therapist, you can get another one. It's less expensive than in-person counseling, but you're still getting the same great help from licensed professionals. And if you have trouble affording it, BetterHelp even has financial aid available. You're always connected to your counselor. You'll have unlimited access, which means you can talk to them every day if you want. It's a good deal. I mentioned last time we talked about this, back in the day when I would go between L.A. and New York. Sometimes I would have an L.A. therapist and talk to them on the phone from New York. And then when I was in L.A., talk to my therapist in New York.
Somehow that just seems right for you.
It was perfect for me.
Keep a distance, even with your therapist.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't know. I think you'd find people who might make a point of that. All right. You can connect from anywhere. So you're not wasting time traveling to someone's office and sitting around in a waiting room. A lot of people are not comfortable talking to a therapist in person. Simply, you don't have the time or you can't afford it. BetterHelp solves all of these problems. Sign up right now. Save on quality professional therapy by going to BetterHelp.com/majority. BetterHelp.com/majority. All right. Going to go through some quick news items that we didn't get to yesterday and some from today. Very quickly, before we get to Brett Kavanaugh stuff. New York Times reporting President Trump threatened yesterday to strip the security clearances of top former officials who criticized his refusal to confront Russia.
Exactly.
Yes, of course. Maybe not necessarily a bad idea to have former officials stripped of their credentials, or maybe like a return checkup like you would with your driver's license and your eyes. But that's not exactly the way to do it. Only your political enemies. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is going to seek to revoke California's authority to regulate automobile greenhouse emissions. As you know, under the Obama administration, there was a plan to have fuel requirements, CAFE standards, to 50 miles per hour by 2025. And the Trump administration wants to roll that back. Maybe around to 1970 levels. I'm not quite sure exactly where it is, but they want to cap it at about 35 miles an hour, I think. This went a long way for us hitting our goals in the Paris agreements. California is the fifth biggest economy in the world. They buy cars, and if they put more stringent standards on them, then car makers just simply make them to work in California, and then the rest of the country gets them, more or less. That's why the Trump administration is trying to keep California from making its own standards. You know, states' rights and all that with the conservatives. They did the same thing during the Clean Air Act under George W. Bush, where states could not actually regulate coal-fired power plants, how much mercury they could put in the air. They actually had to allow more mercury in the air than they were prior because of the federal standards. Meanwhile, Paul Manafort got a week's delay in his court case. U.S. District Court Judge T.S. Ellis III agreed Monday to the week-long delay, but the larger request to postpone didn't fly. Some people think Manafort's holding out for a pardon. I think that may be the case. I also think Manafort's afraid that he's going to get killed if he, honestly, I really think that's what it is.
Honestly, I am.
Mentioned yesterday, Barbara Lee, one of the Democratic Party's most outspoken progressive voices, is going to run for the House Democratic Caucus chair. That was Crowley's position before he lost. She'd be the first African-American woman to hold a leadership spot in either major political party. She's not exactly, part of the younger set in which we would like to see in leadership, but she's certainly one of the most progressive in the entire House. So she was the only person to vote against the original Iraq War resolution.
And the war on terror resolution, the only person in all of Congress
AUMF.
That. Yeah.
Not the only person to run against the war resolution. Or maybe in the House.
Yeah, she was the only person in all of Congress to vote against the original one after September 11th, a couple weeks after.
Literally, Wellstone didn't vote against that?
Votes. Wellstone
sure about
and Kucinich all voted all right. for it. She's the only person to vote against it.
So we'll see. Hopefully she wins. Mentioned yesterday that a one-word loophole in the administration's conventional arms transfer policy has now allowed us to sell more weapons to countries that you need to purposely kill civilians now to not get weapons from us. If you just happen to have a habit of it and you're really bad with aim, then you're okay.
Guys, if you give us another shipment, we're gonna like really
try
to
hard.
Like not massacre villages. Well, A for effort.
So yesterday in private, the Washington Post reported Trump vents frustration over lack of progress on North Korea. Paragraph 4, a missile engine testing facility that Trump said would be destroyed remains intact. And U.S. intelligence officials say Pyongyang is working to conceal key aspects of its nuclear program. He fumed! And then, of course, just oddly, There we go. Oh, we took a new satellite picture the next day. And it seems like it is being now dismantled. Isn't it funny how that works? So weird. So weird.
When your anxiety makes you worried twice.
There you go. All right. That is the quick news roundup. May try and do that a little more. We'll see. Because a lot of stories go under the radar. Okay, so Jamie's going to tell us about her trip over the weekend to the Aussie Fest, which I read the piece in Rolling Stone. Everybody should get there. Read this piece. Still not quite clear. I understand what it is, but I don't know why Grover Norquist is there. And people saying that just get used to stagnant wages, everybody.
Grover Norquist.
There'll be plenty of festivals.
Grover bit the head off a bat.
Is that right? At the Oz Fest?
That's what I heard.
That's exactly what happened.
We will get to that later in the program. And before we get to Brett Kavanaugh, this was just too good. A woman who is not a reporter, as far as I can tell, just an average American. And now, I imagine it will come out that she's, some paid operative for some right-wing outfit. It really doesn't matter. She does? Is she really? Is she a writer?
She's associate editor.
Okay. I didn't know because it didn't sort of like. Okay, yeah, or associate editor because it was. I'm a conservative, and I went to an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez rally. I would assume if you're writing in the Daily Caller, you're a conservative. But I guess this was more of like a clickbait type of thing. She writes that I went to a rally. Against the seven-term incumbent William Lacy Clay. Over the years, I have attended my share of political events. Tea Party protests, a Rick Perry speech on tax cuts.
Electrifying content.
A Ted Cruz rally, and even a speech given by President Donald Trump earlier this year. But nothing prepared me for the stark difference in tone. This sort of reads like a cross between one of those Playboy forums I remember. Like this, honestly,
the last thing I was expecting was to be seduced.
The last thing I was expecting at a Democratic Socialist meeting was to meet a hot Puerto Rican.
I'm no nerd. I mean, I've been around, but the last thing I expected to hear. Here we go. Okay, so. Ocasio-Cortez spoke, followed by Bush, that's the candidate, and I saw something truly terrifying. I saw just how easy it would be, were I less involved and less certain of our nation's founding and its history, to fall for the populist lines they were shouting from that stage. I saw how easy it would be, as a parent, to accept the idea that my children deserve health care and education.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to manipulate people with stuff like that.
I want this to marinate in your brain that a parent just said, I saw how easy it would be as a parent to accept the idea that my children deserve health care and education.
Jesus.
I saw how easy it would be as someone who struggled to make ends meet to accept the idea that a, quote, living wage was a human right.
Sounds persuasive, doesn't it?
Above all, I saw how easy it would be to accept the notion that it was the government's job to make sure that those things were provided. I watched as both Ocasio-Cortez, and I should say, I didn't read this part because I wasn't sure about it earlier, but she talks about hearing all of these snippets of conversations, okay, that involved one person praising the strength and dedication of convicted cop killer Asada Shakur.
I'd also like to just co-sign. I would like to praise Asada Shakur, if I may. Thank you.
I mean, all these, whatever. Okay, it doesn't matter. All right, whatever. I watched as both Ocasio-Cortez and Bush deftly chopped America up into demographics. Pointed out how those demographics had been victimized under the current system. and then promise to be the voice for those demographics. The movement, Ocasio-Cortez shouted, knows no zip code. It knows no state. It knows no race. It knows no gender. It knows no documented status. In other words, they cut it up into demographics, but then said, the movement's not about demographics. Bush, after saying your piece, noted she was careful to allow speakers from all across, all demographics. Why demographics? What the... To make it clear she was not running to represent just one particular group, but all.
My demographics get it.
Lot of demographics.
I can't quite get my arms around whether she's saying that they contradicted themselves or that... Because that last sentence says, even though we've allowed speakers to talk about things from different demographics here, we represent everyone. How horrific. Now, as opposed to, let's say, that Ted Cruz rally, where, like, we only have one broad demographic, normal white people, and that's it.
We have one demographic, and other demographics are going to need to quiet
down. I left the rally with a photo, in part to remind myself of that time I crashed a rally headlined by a socialist, but also in part to remind myself that there, but for the grace of God, go I.
This is God. Listen, your kid does not deserve health care or the ability to eat. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of propaganda that, as an example, a kid who has leukemia but didn't work for his health care deserves treatment.
Please?
Don't get fooled by the old Jew or the young PR. Stay true.
Please. Believe me. Listen, you know it's God. I'm a guy.
All right, so...
Why can't we use the word slut anymore? This is God.
Jezebels. She, of course, got a ride onto a free ticket, I should say, onto Fox and Friends. And here she is. Was she on Fox and Friends? Oh, yeah, she. Here she is on Fox and Friends talking about the horror that she had witnessed the night before and where she would have gone but for the grace of God.
Conservative, and she went to one of her rallies. Daily Caller's Virginia Cruda, thank you so much for being with us. And you wrote an op-ed about it. Tell us why you went to her rally. What was the interest?
Thanks for having me. I went kind of to see what the fuss was about, really, because, I mean, I've been to conservative rallies before. I've been to a Trump speech. I've been to a Ted Cruz rally when he was running for president. And I just kind of wanted to see, you know, why the message was resonating, because really the socialist message is gaining steam within the Democrat Party.
So based upon what you saw, why are people drawn to this message?
I was listening to them talk, to Ocasio-Cortez and also to Cori Bush, who she was stumping for in St. Louis. And they say things, I mean, they talk about things that everybody wants, especially like if you're a parent. They talk about education for your kids, health care for your kids, the things that you want. And, you know, if you're not really paying attention to how they're going to pay for it or, you know, the rest of that, it's easy to fall into that trap and say, my kids deserve this. And, you know, well, maybe the government should be responsible for helping me with that.
Mm-hmm. Virginia, as a conservative, when you're sitting in that
audience... Pause it for 1 second. I mean, does it feel like as she's even saying these words out of her mouth, that she's about to go, wait a second.
Virginia, a sociopath, how do you respond to the basic human sentiment that children shouldn't starve and people should have health care? This is pretty easy for people to fall into.
I like how she
the...
says, like, they don't talk about how you're going to pay for it or any of that.
You can kind of see the gears turning in her mind right now.
Honestly, right? Like, she's just going, like, God, it would be nice if my kids could get health care. Continue.
...for your kids, health care for your kids, the things that you want. And, you know, if you're not really paying attention to how they're going to pay for it or, you know, the rest of that, it's easy to fall into that trap and say, my kids deserve this. And... you know, well, maybe the government should be responsible for helping me with that.
Mm-hmm. Virginia, as a conservative, when you're sitting in that audience or standing in that audience and you're listening to that message, how did it make you feel? Were you angry? Were you more drawn to that?
I was mostly uncomfortable because I was surrounded by a group of people who were talking about how they had gotten involved because they were tired of being angry all the time. And it seems like so much effort to be angry about everything instead of to focus on what you could do to change it.
I didn't get the last part. That was very confusing.
Did they just say that?
Yeah.
There were people at a political rally to support candidates who were going to go out and change things. And they said that they were there because they were tired of being angry. And I just think it's weird that you would be angry and not go out and do something to support it.
She's really phoning it in here.
No kidding.
Like, if I didn't know better, I'd think she were a plant from the DSA.
I mean, it's possible. Or I think it's possible we're watching sort of like a slow rolling awakening slash nervous breakdown. That's possible.
It reminds me of, you know, how Dave Rubin talks about how the left is so negative.
Right.
She goes to a Bernie or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez thing and gets the exact opposite.
Precisely.
Impression.
Especially. And then maybe when Tucker's like, you're fired and you don't have health care anymore. Maybe that will be the next lesson.
Right.
For her
exactly.
Ongoing nervous
now,
breakdown.
Now, this notion of conservatives being afraid that the left in some way offers some vision that is like too sugary and too the trap here is that it actually sounds great is an old construct. In fact, back in FUBAR, the book that Stephen Sherrill and I wrote back in 2006.
We had a
clip. Let's put that clip up there. Not a clip. A story about a guy named Dr. Paul Cameron. He was the founder of the Family Research Institute and the unfortunately named ISIS, which was the Institute for the Scientific Investigation of Sexuality. This is a real...
ISIS might actually have something that's similarly named and programmed.
Right. He was a huge figure in the right's attempt to marginalize LGBT people. And this is a clip of something that he wrote. This is from I think it might be an interview that Robert Dreyfuss did with him back in 1999. If you isolate sexuality as something solely for one's own personal amusement, and all you want is the most satisfying orgasm you can get, and that's what homosexuality seems to be, then homosexuality seems too powerful to resist. The evidence is that men do a better job on men, and women, I'm not clear where this evidence lies, but it's possible.
He's reviewed the evidence, he's seen a lot of documentaries about this.
And women on women, if all you're looking for is orgasm, I'm convinced that lesbians are particularly good seducers. It's pure sexuality. It's almost like pure heroin. It's such a rush. They are committed in almost a religious way. As opposed to the religious people committed in a religious way.
So this guy was like literally soliciting small-scale donations to watch porn all day?
And they'll take enormous risks, do anything. Marital sex tends toward the boring end. Generally, it doesn't deliver the kind of sheer sexual pleasure that homosexual sex does.
The era of the pajama boy is over.
I think in the book we said our apologies to Mrs. Dr. Cameron. But that's the whole story here, right? Like, the problem with the idea, as a parent, you're susceptible to this message that your kid deserves health care and an education. And it's so alluring that you will actually maybe sign up to have your kid get health care and an education. And then your kid will have health care and an education.
Part of me wishes I was still religious so I could tell that woman that she's probably listening to Satan when he leads her away from this. Like, there before the grace of God, that's not God.
That's Satan. Well, there you have it, folks. The Daily Caller. But you know what's awesome about that story? Is it is the most clicked story, I would bet, on Daily Caller, probably nice. For the week. And so they're going to do more of these. Like, I went to an AOC rally, and she promised that people would get the opportunity to go to college for free.
And let's not shy away from this. Not only do they deserve college, they deserve pure heroin orgasms. We're not going to shy away from it anymore. Pure gay heroin, pure, not stepped on, straight from the poppy fields of Pakistan.
That'd be a good slogan. Yeah. Pure heroin orgasms.
Pure heroin orgasms. Okay, look, in my opinion, you go to Denmark, there's a lot more pure heroin orgasms, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have that here.
All right, look, I want to get into this Kavanaugh stuff. This is going to get a little weedy, folks, just a little bit. But this is important, because if you live in West Virginia, if you live in North Dakota, Indiana, Missouri, I guess. Really, you should be telling, you should be getting in touch with your senator regardless, and telling them to vote no on Kavanaugh if it gets to the floor, to pressure their fellow senators. If you're in Maine or Alaska in particular, you should be calling Collins and Murkowski. If you're in Kentucky, you should call Rand Paul and laugh at him for pretending like he's going to vote against Kavanaugh. But here is the I think everyone is familiar with the threat that a Brett Kavanaugh is to abortion rights. Roe v. Wade does not need to be turned overturned for the right to have an access to have access to an abortion, and the access to an abortion for that to be lost in 20, 24 states across the country. You have laws that have been struck down by the Supreme Court that infringe upon this right. And yes, there are a couple of states right now where it's bad enough that maybe you have like one abortion clinic in the entire state, hard for people to reach.
Yeah, it's already effectively banned in a lot of these places and for a lot of people.
Yes, it will be effectively banned in a much larger swath of places because the Supreme Court will change the level of scrutiny that a law passed by a state that inhibits access will receive. So in other words, if you have a law that says that abortion clinics need to have ceilings that are 14 feet high and they need to be kept at, sub-zero temperatures, whatever the absurdity of the law is, a Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court versus Anthony Kennedy one will allow that law to stand and effectively make it impossible to even create an abortion clinic. But also in mortal threat will be the thin reed of voting rights we still have in this country. For instance, Alabama has a strict voter ID law. This is something that only could have happened because of the Supreme Court gutting Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which is the pre-clearance. There were about 13 states in the country that needed an okay from the Department of Justice to change their voting rights because they had a history of racially disenfranchising voters. So Alabama could do this. And then in 2015, they started closing down DMV offices in predominantly black neighborhoods. You see that there's this same dynamic here, right? You need a strict, you need a voter ID, and then we say, oh, it's going to be really difficult for you to get a voter ID. There was a federal probe in 2015 by the Department of Justice under Obama, and the state backed off it. All right. In 1980, a lot of this comes from Ian Millhiser, incidentally, in Think Progress. Supreme Court held in Mobile v. Bowdoin that a Voting Rights Act plaintiff must show that the law they're challenging was enacted with a racially discriminative motivation. Merely showing that the law would have a detrimental impact on minority voters was not enough to prevail. However, the Senate and the House then updated the Voting Rights Act, establishing that you could look at results and see if the results of a new law, a voting law, was producing racial voter disenfranchisement. When Ronald Reagan signed that law into existence, he did so over the strenuous objections of a guy who worked in the Department of Justice in the Civil Rights Division, if you could believe it. His name was John Roberts. He is now the Chief Justice on the Supreme Court. Roberts wants to gut all of these voting rights provisions. So to give you a sense of how close we are to that, and the difference that Anthony Kennedy makes in this. There was a case called the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs versus Inclusive Communities Project. It was the question as whether the Fair Housing Act, like the Voting Rights Act, targets disparate impact discrimination. In other words, discrimination that can be shown not by proving intent, but discrimination that can be shown by proving outcomes. And it also challenged that notion about disparate impact discrimination. It also threatened to gut the federal ban on housing discrimination. In the years leading up to this decision, the Justice Department used disparate impact suits to force the mortgage lender Countrywide into a $335 million settlement after the lender charged higher fees and rates to more than 200,000 minority borrowers around the country than to white borrowers, even though they had the same exact credit profile. Okay, so you don't need to prove that Countrywide had meetings saying, hey, let's charge black people more money for this same product. You just need to look at the data and say, black people have been charged more money for the same product, even though they have the same risk profile. And that was enough to prove under the disparate impact principle. Those disparate impact suits are also how the Department of Justice would challenge voting changes. The court decided 5-4 not to end disparate impact suits involving housing discrimination because Anthony Kennedy was the fifth vote. Roberts didn't just say that we should get rid of disparate impact, but that all laws banning disparate impact discrimination are unconstitutional. He said this during the oral arguments. So imagine how you would apply that to voting rights. Okay? If a law goes in effect, strict voter ID, and the data shows that 300,000 African Americans versus 25,000 white people, I'm just throwing out these numbers, although these are relatively close, would be disenfranchised, even though they're eligible to vote. You can no longer use that as evidence of saying this law impinges upon people's right to vote based upon race. We've spoken about the case Abbott v. Perez that came down from the Supreme Court. Really, it was the day after or the day before Kennedy announced his retirement. So people missed this. But Texas gerrymandered their state. They did it in a way that was found to be racially discriminatory. It was found to be racially discriminatory both from a disparate impact perspective, but also in terms of intent, right? By the DOJ. So this created a small crisis in 2012 because the election was coming up soon. The federal court redrew some of the maps, but left, because the state didn't have time to fix it, left many of the state's illegally gerrymandered districts the same. Then, subsequent to that, and the court said this is not a final ruling on these maps. This is just because we're having an emergency. In 2013, the Texas legislature looked at the court-drawn maps, with many of them that were still those same illegal districts, wrote them into law. And Texas then argued, you can't challenge these maps because they were originally drawn by a court. And the Supreme Court then said, you know what? We agree with the Texas state legislature, because when you challenge a state law was enacted with discriminatory intent, you need to look at when this law was passed. So even though the 2013 law establishing these districts was based upon illegal districts, because they didn't draw them, there could be no intent to draw them in any way. They just passed them. So the plaintiffs had to prove for a second time that the districts were drawn with the racist intent that they were the first time. But how could you prove that? Because they didn't even draw them. They just accepted them from the court, even though those are supposed to be interim. That's what's going on in the Supreme Court right now. Brett Kavanaugh is going to make this much, much worse. There was a report that came out by the Brennan Center just the other day. It gives a sense of so far what we've seen in the past 2 years following the preclearance provisions in the Shelby versus Holder ruling. Between 2014 and 2016, 16 million registered voters were removed from state rolls. 33% more than were moved between 2006 and 2008. For the election of 2012 and 2016, the Brennan Center estimates that 2 million fewer voters would have been purged from those if those states had to apply by the provisions of the Voting Rights Act. So you had 2 million people. Remember, the last election in the state of Wisconsin and the state of Michigan, Clinton lost by less than 20,000 votes in those two states combined. And then another 40-some-odd thousand votes in Pennsylvania. So you had 2 million voters who lost their right to vote across the country. And they'd go through the different states, but this is what we're talking about. Jeff Sessions' Department of Justice has now been urging states to do more purging. And almost every type of voter purge disproportionately affects black voters and voters of color. Some states purge rolls based solely on names, but non-whites are more likely to have the same names. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 16.3% of Hispanic people and 13% of black people have one of the 10 most common surnames, compared to 4.5% of white people. So in other words, if you think a Jose Rodriguez is, you know, registered in another state, you find one in your state, you can take him off the rolls. So that's what's going on, and Brett Kavanaugh will make this much, much worse. That's just a notion of the stakes that's involved here. There's a lot more stuff, obviously, but those are two very big ones. And when you talk about women's right to have sovereignty over their own bodies, and when you talk about a systemic and structural change to who can vote in this country in terms of keeping Republicans in power, maybe adding another person to the Supreme Court. That's what we're looking at. Right now, Chuck Schumer has said that he will not meet with Kavanaugh, and none of the Democrats will meet with Kavanaugh until there's a deal on documents he produced while working for the Bush administration. They did the same thing with Kagan when she worked for under Obama. There are 5 years worth of documents that that Kavanaugh produced during that time, emails, whatnot. However, there are two Democrats who will not be joining Chuck Schumer and his caucus in not voting. Can we guess who it is?
Manchin.
Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Camp. And has already scheduled a meeting with the judge for next Monday. Heidi Heitkamp has not scheduled a meeting, but has said that she will meet with him. Kavanaugh's met with 23 Republicans, not a single Democrat. So the point I was making a week or two ago about how you approach Manchin and Heitkamp, I don't think they care that much about abortion rights. I don't think they care that much about disenfranchising African Americans. What would you say the minority population is in North Dakota?
It'd be
Matt?
Disenfranchising Native Americans.
Native Americans, right.
And
fair
that's
enough.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, you know, Jenks, I don't really think that much about engines. It's not what I represent in my state.
Are
Native American votes essential to get a Democrat? And how are Native American votes distributed in a place like North Dakota?
They're pretty much close to reservations generally. They're not nearly as big a part of most races.
And do they favor Democrats typically?
All right. So there's a couple of things that I think they're going to try and hang their hat on. One that just came out. In some of the documents that Kavanaugh has already provided, he apparently was at a roundtable discussion with other lawyers. And he said at three different times in the conversation that the Supreme Court decision, U.S. v. Nixon, which was an 8-0 decision. William Rehnquist recused himself because he was appointed by Nixon. It was an 8-0 decision. That the president of the United States was not above the law, that he had to comply with handing over those tapes. This is a huge milestone in the relationship between the judiciary and the presidency. The idea that the executive is not above the law is a huge deal, and it is completely out of mainstream legal thought to think that Nixon didn't have to hand over those tapes. He said at the time, maybe Nixon was wrongly decided. Heresy, though it is to say so. So there's going to be people out there who say, well, he was just doing a hypothetical. But hypotheticals are not heresy. Why would you feel self-conscious about saying that? If it was just, I'm just saying hypothetically, you would say. Not. It's heresy to say so. Nixon took away the power of the president to control information in the executive branch by holding that the courts had power. And by Nixon, he's saying the case. The case took away the power of the president to control information in the executive branch by holding that the courts had power and jurisdiction to order the president to disclose information in response to a subpoena sought by a subordinate executive branch official. That, of course, has major implications for what everybody anticipates could be a situation with Donald Trump. For Manchin and Heitkamp, the fight has to be nonpartisan and non-ideological. It has to be about law and order, about the structure of our government. Michael Waldman, the president of the nonpartisan Brennan Center for Justice at New York University Law School, has been writing a book on the Nixon case, and he called Kavanaugh's quote, startling. He said, it's not only out of the mainstream on this legal question of presidential accountability, it's the main basis for how we've done it in the last half century. It's not perfect, but it's never been questioned in a high-profile way. The historian who was the former director of the Richard Nixon Presidential Library. There wasn't any dispute amongst the justices. The real fight was over who would write the opinion. Berger's initial opinion was just so weak that they all revised it. But it wasn't because they disagreed. The Nixon Library. That is going to be the turning point. Right. The Nixon stuff is very fertile ground. It's stable ground for the Democrats. There's also one other aspect that I think he's going to be asked that is also going to be about law and order. About a week or two ago, Jonathan Alter, the former reporter for Newsweek at the time, I don't know where he's at now, but back in the day, Alter was at Newsweek. He tweeted out when Kavanaugh was nominated that Kavanaugh routinely skirted or violated grand jury secrecy rules while working on Ken Starr's staff as a lawyer in the Bill Clinton impeachment case or Whitewater. He has since backed off that a little bit to say 20 years ago, I had indications that Kavanaugh was in contact with reporters. And because it involves potential violation of federal law, those contacts need to be thoroughly exploited in the confirmation process. The law is Rule 6E about secrecy in grand jury selections. There was a piece by Josh Gerstein in Politico magazine yesterday about this. Kavanaugh spent 4 years working for Ken Starr's independent counsel probe. Starr took what is politely referred to as an expansive view of permissible contact with the media. Understand, when we hear leaks about the Russia investigation, none of them come from Mueller's side. I mean, I've talked to reporters about this, and they don't know of any reporter second, third, fourth hand who's getting anything from Mueller or any of his people. They have locked this up. Starr, according to the Iran Contra prosecutor John Barrett, now a law professor, had attorneys like Kavanaugh contact people who might have information to come to the office and offer to guide the press about the work of the office. Stephen Brill, who had a magazine in 1998, wrote a cover story about Starr's alleged leaks to the press. And Brill says that Kavanaugh needs to offer a more detailed account of his interaction with reporters during the Whitewater probe. If what he did was not improper, why didn't he do it on the record? The point is they all knew it violated Rule 6E. Brett was involved. 6E has the force of law, folks. It is a federal offense to disclose what goes on in a grand jury. In his application for the Supreme Court, Kavanaugh said that he had interviews for 7 books. And then he writes, in addition to the interviews listed above, I've also spoken to reporters on background as appropriate or as directed. So in other words, Brill is saying, why don't you go on the record if what you're saying is not a violation of 6E? Why would you go on background? And why does he write as appropriate or as directed? He was assigned by a Starr to talk to the press in several areas, including to explain legal issues, said one person who's close to Kavanaugh and spoke on condition of anonymity. In other words, one of Kavanaugh's thing is going to be, I was just following orders. That was authorized and at Starr's request to deal with the media on those issues so they could have the office's perspective. That was not someone leaking. In other words, they're redefining leaking secret grand jury stuff, which is illegal under 6E. They're redefining as being unauthorized by the guy who is the lead investigator, as opposed to being the tool in which that lead investigator leaks stuff illegally under 6E. This stuff needs to be really drawn out. Apparently, apparently back in the day, if you want to do one of those illicit histories, this would be worthwhile.
Yeah, this would be.
Clinton's personal attorney, David Kendall, began complaining publicly about alleged leaks of grand jury information in 1997. Kavanaugh at that time was working for Starr. This is sort of interesting. Kavanaugh transitioned out of the office in November, just before the Monica Lewinsky sex scandal broke. In 1998, Starr's office filed 96 declarations from staff members denying involvement in Lewinsky-related leaks. With today's filing, everyone in the Office of Special Counsel is on record denying, under penalty of perjury, responsibility for disclosing to the news media any of the grand jury material. Now, it's curious, because Rod Rosenstein completed the declaration denying his involvement, even though he had also left the office in October, several months before the Lewinsky story broke. Kavanaugh, who left the office later than October, was not among the Starr lawyers and investigators who filed declarations under penalty of perjury in February 1998. The question is, why not? Someone else close to Kavanaugh says they think he did at least one declaration confirming that he was not a source for leaks, but they're not sure. So this is the territory where the Democrats need to fight. You need to lock in the Democrats, and then you go to Murkowski and Collins and talk about choice, because that's where they have claimed they will draw the line. So if you're in West Virginia, if you're in North Dakota, in fact, if you're anywhere, call these senators' offices, be polite, and say, we want to know if he was involved in leaks as a special prosecutor, because that's illegal. And that is contrary to a judicial temperament. And we want to know if he disagrees, if he thinks that that presidents don't need to heed subpoenas from the Department of Justice. How can he serve on a Supreme Court, be appointed by a guy who's being under investigation? And then I would say Russia, Russia, Russia a bunch, honestly, because it would be helpful.
You're on the phone with some congressional staffer, and you're like, consider the worst-case scenario. You just start talking like Rachel Maddow.
This is all important stuff, because if this builds and Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings can be put into jeopardy, if they require more documents, and it'll take some time to go through these documents, and confirmation hearings can be pushed past November, the November elections, there is a slight outside chance that there would be too much political pressure on Mitch McConnell. Slight outside, because the man is despicable. He's shameless. He doesn't care. To hold confirmation hearings in the month before, during the lame duck session.
If we push it long enough, does McConnell think to himself, maybe I'll make the gamble because this could help our turnout as well?
It's conceivable. Yeah. It's conceivable. I mean, I think he wants to lock it in because a bird in the hand.
Sure.
But,
of course.
But at the very least, you put this in play and you give the chance if Democrats, also a long shot, but possible, take the Senate. So this is it, folks. This is desperation time. This is desperation time. There's no doubt about it. There's no other way to phrase it. And these are just, abortion rights, voting rights, just two of so many. And understand, too, that Donald Trump has been filling federal judiciary slots at a record pace. So you have the Supreme Court, but as you start having circuit courts become packed with Trump nominees and these Federalist Society people, you will have jurisdictions where one jurisdiction, one region will weigh in one way and another will weigh in another. And there will be different law in those two jurisdictions. It may go to the Supreme Court at that point because there's a disparate sense between these district courts, circuit courts, I should say. And there's Brett Kavanaugh. So there's going to be an aggressiveness to change all sorts of laws, just knowing that that's the stopgap, is the Supreme Court. So super ugly. All right, we're going to take a break. Just a reminder, this program relies on its members for its support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. We give you extra content. We show up every day, and you can support media that you like and appreciate. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Don't forget, today is Tuesday. You know what that means. Tonight is the Michael Brooks Show. Tonight, it'll be starring Michael Brooks and...
Marissa Barardaran, which is, I'm getting, I'm
Excuse
like
me?
80% what? On. What's her name?
Marissa Barardaran.
Yes, her. Hmm. And then there's also going
like
to be a...
developing a little trouble pronouncing names.
Developing?
I learned from the best. I learned. I have studied at the feet of the mispronunciation sensei.
I learned from watching you, Dad.
There you go.
Yeah. What did you expect me to do different? I've listened to you mangle everything for years.
That's my hook.
And then we're also going to do an extended segment on this new Israeli sort of enshrining discrimination and how that relates to the history of the ANC and Nelson Mandela. It was his birthday last week. There's a new Gulag song from William Lee. So a bunch of stuff, patreon.com/TMBS. And also find out, thanks to everybody, we already have like about 520-something people on the new YouTube channel, and we'll have more information on that soon.
Jamie, we're going to talk about your trip to Oz or Aussie or whatever the hell that was.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
And are you going to be talking about that on the next Antifada?
A little bit. They talked about it a lot on the episode of Chapo Trap House that came out this week, and I talked about it a lot in my Rolling Stone piece. So we kind of touch on it briefly.
Okay.
But we have on our friend Wilson Sherwin, who is a Marxist feminist PhD candidate studying under Francis Fox Piven at the CUNY Grad Center, and we talk about Marxist feminism and the National Welfare Rights Organization, which was a very radical movement that she's currently writing her dissertation or whatchamacallit, thesis on.
Whatchamacallit?
Yeah.
Francis Fox Piven, and we're going to alert Glenn Beck.
Oh, yeah.
Francis Fox Piven.
Dangerous lady. Notorious FFP in the house.
And Matt, what's happening on Literary Hangover?
Young Goodman Brown came out to huge applause this weekend. It pairs well with Daily Caller associate editor Virginia Cruda, who we saw earlier today. Young Goodman Brown's about a character who goes into the woods and gets sort of spiritually confused. And I think it's good to keep in mind this associate editor going to see Ocasio-Cortez.
You were looking at the sound sheet. I literally thought you had written copy.
Oh,
no. Wow.
I was just trying to get
Matt getting very serious.
He's getting serious about his promos.
But that Daily Caller editor is basically the Young Goodman Brown of our time.
There you go. Oh,
that's interesting.
I bet you should be excited to hear that. All right, folks. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of this program. And you can IM us through the app. Listen, we literally released, I think, multiple editions of the Android app yesterday. So if you're having problems, go... update your app. I know you updated it yesterday. Update it again. It should be working. We'll be right back with the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.